Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by JHM Marketing. Our guest today is Darren Herman, the CEO of Hoboto and host of Establishing Your Empire podcast. Establishing Your Empire is a film podcast that inspires entrepreneurs, creatives, and future business owners to pursue their passions, grow their organizations, and build their empire. Today, expect to learn the importance of taking action and starting rather than waiting for everything to be perfect. Explore the ability of podcasts to facilitate connections, build relationships, and expand one's network in ways you haven't thought of before. Discover why Darren prioritizes creating a unique visual identity for his podcast and how he optimizes audience engagement and retention. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast. And we're going to keep bringing you all the different gurus in the podcast industry to explain to you all the different ways you can use your podcast to help and grow your business. And with that, here's Darren Herman.
So, Darren, when I think about podcast names, there are a few that are pretty badass and that make me think like, wow, that's somebody who nailed it. Establishing Your Empire is definitely one of those. So tell me a bit about this podcast. Let's start with the name, actually. You know what? Where did the name come from?
So I love that question because it's actually somewhat of a long answer. So my apologies right away. But so a name is so hard. Like, you have an idea. I want to do a podcast. And you're like, okay, I want to get a good name. And you struggle all day long. And this is where a lot of people will just be like, well, I'm not going to start until I have my name picked out. And I was kind of doing that, right? And, you know, I've been in photography and videography for a long time, so I have all the equipment, so I don't have that excuse to not start. I have a pretty good network, so there's no excuse there. And I was talking to my wife, and she goes, you know, if I was going to do a podcast, you know, and she was talking to me, she said, this is what you would say to me, is just start. The name will come. So I actually recorded 4 episodes with no name. Didn't launch them, you know, with people that I somewhat knew, you know, because I also do think your first couple episodes should be somewhat comfortable. And then, yeah, finally had the name, Establishing Your Empire. And it really goes well. And I always like a .com. So that's made the struggle even harder for a name. I don't have to have one, but I typically like to have one. So it really goes well because I like to know like how people built their empires, how they start, how do they, you know, move from 0 to 1, and how do they scale, then how did they exit, you know, and restart it, right? So got very lucky with a great name. Another piece on the name, though, it doesn't really matter. You need to love the name. If it's a great show, people are going to find it anyway. You could be Google is one of the worst names ever. And guess what? It's one of the biggest companies in the world.
Lots to unpack here, because I love that. So I was listening to a podcast recently, shocker, and the guy was planning how to name a podcast. And he was taking the example of the shows that he wants to interview great guests on. And typically he says, hey, actually, if that's your strategy, try to come up with a name that will flatter the ego of the guests. For instance, whatever leaders, like the SaaS leaders or the tech leaders or the C-suite podcast, this kind of thing, like the thing that will say, oh, okay, I will be part of something big where other big people are in there. With Establishing Your Empire, it's not only that. It's also like, hey, I'm going to interview people who built it, have a feeling from scratch, and like became emperors. That's so good. Was it anything like that at all? Or did you just come up with it after the 4 episodes because you were like, actually, that makes sense?
Somewhat. I thought of it in a little bit of a different way, although I think that's always the back of my head because I am someone who's really into marketing and I own a marketing agency. So I think there has to be that piece. I look at it more, especially podcasts, is like, who do I want to talk to and what kind of platform do I want to give the guests? My podcast is all about the guests, and we'll get into that. So I do think it's in the way of, yeah, actually, you're probably more right. Sorry, I'm kind of thinking about this in real time, is it really was like, I wanted to show, give somebody a platform to talk about the empire they built. I don't think I consciously did that, but really the whole podcast was set up to sit there and say, how can I give a great guest experience? And, you know, I started mine 4 or 5 years ago, probably 4 years ago. now video, like we're on video now and it's easy. Back then, like I had to like screen record my Google Meet, like icon, because you couldn't record really on a lot of stuff. And I did it, I did start in person, and I thought, okay, what can I do better than other people? Like, what am I good at than others? And I wasn't interviewing at that time. Now I think I'm pretty decent at least, but it was, oh, I could do video. Like I have a video background, I can do video very well. And my thought was like, if I can put this guest up on a pedestal, you know, and get a great interaction with that guest, I can make them look good via video, do some lights, you know, the whole nine yards. And so I think the name went into that too. I just don't think I did it consciously.
Love it. And so the other thing you mentioned, so that makes a lot of sense, Darren. And I love that background. The other thing you mentioned was you want to link it with a .com. Why is that actually? You're the first one to bring that up in the interview, and I'm curious to dig a little bit into it.
Yeah, I think there's just like a little pride or maybe even ego behind that of growing up in the internet world. Like, so I grew up very poor, started working at the ripe age of 13 years old, making $3 an hour, you know, and I graduated high school in 2001. So you think the internet was like a big piece of when I grew up, but it was my great equalizer. The internet gave me the same platform as somebody else. In fact, probably better because I could use it to my advantage. So, I mean, I started my first company at 20 years old. And so that is very much .com central. You know, people, .net, you had to like explain that four times over. I thought of a .com back then, and still now not as heavy as, you know, it's the corner side lot. If you don't have the best lot, like as a physical retail store, you just have to pay more for marketing. My thought is if I get a better name.com, I could pay less, a little bit less for marketing. So my marketing agency is Goboto, GOBOTO.com. That's a six-letter.com. Not the best name because people mispronounce it and stuff, but it's six-letter.com. And I have a startup, which I end up is probably not one of the best purchases for your for early on startup, but I bought the name realmarket.com. I think for me, it adds a level of legitimacy. And I know that if I love it more myself, doesn't other people don't have to love it yet. I know I'll take it more serious and put more effort behind it and put the extra hours and do all the extra stuff that has to get done for something to be successful. And so for some reason, it's part of it for me.
Yeah, I love that. And that's so smart. When we are, so I have this discussion out right now. I'm in a co-working space where you have like videographers, photographs, ad specialists, web developers, and so on and so forth. And I'm learning a lot about SEO with that guy who is only doing websites. And he's like, if you have an exact match between a Google query and the name of your domain, you're going to rank much higher from the get-go. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. And so if you nail that .com, if you nail the name of your website slash podcast that you want to link eventually, you can just go much, much further. Actually, you can go probably at the same distance or however we phrase it in English, but much faster. And this is the crux of it at the end of the day.
Yeah, so I'm an SEO guy too. So I'll give you a couple quick hits on that one. So if you go to my website, establishingyourempire.com, you know, at first I used to do transcripts up there because I wanted a lot of content. SEO, content is king. The name thing is one of those tips and tricks deals. It used to be huge. In fact, we used to buy like 40 domains and then like do all these sub landing pages. That doesn't work as well anymore. It does like give you a boost, but it's not the end all be all. So, but if you're doing a podcast, make sure you do a website. That way you can put a bunch of content up there. And now with ChatGPT, you can literally post it in there. Usually you have to, what I usually use is there's some free websites out there to like take your hour and a half podcast and make it into like eight different things for ChatGPT because it's too long. And just summarize it, throw that on the pod on your website. Now you have all this great content, which is what matters the most at SEO. People talk about a lot of tips and tricks. Those do help, but content is king on SEO. So it doesn't have to be a beautiful website, although that's again another like pride thing for me is I like to have a beautiful website, but you got to get the content up there. And long format podcasting, especially any format podcast, I mean long format, you get a ton of content, so it definitely helps with your SEO.
100%. So I love this because we are completely taking your tangent here, but that's perfect. And I absolutely love this. So one of the recommendations we give is indeed to transform all the podcast content into articles, like 5 to 10 minutes read, and optimize it for SEO with a bit of ChatGPT or with a copywriter, depending on what you want to get out of it. Question for you then, Darren. You have a dedicated website for the podcast where you post the different episodes and the written pieces of content, and you have a different website for your business website. Why is that? Why wouldn't you drive all the SEO juice from the podcast directly towards where you want your clients to go, your audience to go, at least to get some traffic?
So you're correct. It was a decision, and I knew might not be the best decision. One of the things, so my marketing agency, I've had for a while. So one of the reasons why I started a podcast, let me back up slightly. I live in Austin, Texas, and this is one of the startup capitals of the world now. It's always had a tech scene, but especially right before COVID and definitely during COVID, it just has blown up in startup. And I started my podcast pre-COVID, but I really wanted to get more in the podcast scene and probably do my next phase of my career. I probably still should have done it on Gobato, my marketing agency, you know, and I even dual posted at first, and then, but you have to like change content and all that to do that. And I really thought hard. I was like, really, my goal on my podcast is to meet interesting people doing interesting things and, you know, network better and enhance my network, but also meet people in the startup world, meet venture capitalists. So I decided it was best to have a really smooth deal there. Plus, I also use like, oh, obviously we did the website and people like the website. So I think it was just forcing myself to say, hey, my next thing is going to be a startup, and let's, you know, start the transition in that way.
Makes a lot of sense. And I think, so you hit on something very important here. Depending on the objective of the podcast and what it must serve in the long term, it actually would make more sense to build a dedicated website for it if the real idea is to thought leadership, appearing as a trade syndication almost, like being the thing on its own, to indeed detach yourself or detach it from the business that might not be there in 5 years, or at least you might not be in the business in 5 years' time, whereas the podcast is really there to last and to build that brand and to build that those connections. And you might have people who also might not want to go on the show because it's directly linked to a company, whereas if it has its own website, then you're like, oh yeah, sure, why not? Could be fun.
Yeah, I think also, like, you know, my podcast, yes, there's a lot of startups, but we're you know, I've had film directors and musicians, so it was a little bit more of the theory of how to start, how to grow, how to exit, you know, more than like, how do you get more clients in real estate or something, right? You know, what was the vertical was very broad. So that there was that too. I think if your vertical is very niched up, then I think it almost sometimes helps that it's, you know, underneath there. But I don't think you could go wrong, but yeah, it definitely hurts. Some SEO, I could get a lot of SEO juice that I left on the table, and I knew that, and that is a little, it still pains me a little bit, as you can tell.
I feel it a bit, but fair. No, look, makes also sense to have it on the dedicated website. Cool. Darren, how about you tell me more about this podcast story then? Establishing your empire. So we have the genesis. We have the, hey, want to start this thing, already have the gear, just don't know how to name it. Start interviewing people, have 4 episodes in the bag, and then you're like, okay, that's going to be establishing your empire. 4 or 5 years later down the line, you are at, what, 60 episodes, I think? So quite some more than the 4 initial episodes. Tell me the story of establishing your empire. What's behind it? Why did you do it? Why did you continue it? What's the story?
So there's multiple pieces here. And I will say that a podcast has been one of the most amazing things in my career. And I've done interesting things in my career before too, and I wouldn't go into the monetization part of it. It's there's so much pieces that you can monetize out around the podcast. We'll get into that, I'm sure, later. But I wanted to network more. I wanted to be a better speaker. Like, I've never been, I was always a great salesperson, especially selling somebody else's stuff. But like, if we got into a room, I just felt like I had a lot more improvement that could happen there. Still do. And I really just wanted to have more interesting conversations. Those were the kind of personal reasons. And then I've already kind of talked about, hey, I want to start a startup. I want to meet more forward venture capitalists. I thought a podcast would be a way better thing to say, hey, would you like to be on my show that's filmed? It's a long format. Over, can we go get coffee, right? The first probably 20 episodes pre-COVID, maybe 15 or something like that, whatever the amount was, we're all in person. I knew I wanted to do virtual, but I wanted the in-person, I could do so much stronger and you got to submit a stronger connection. And then obviously virtual had to happen. So those kind of two mergings happened. So what's interesting about podcasts, I do 100%, there's a lot of work behind it, editing and all this stuff. I did like to edit my first ones, which were painful. I edit myself, to listen to myself. The mistakes, me talking over somebody, you know, the filler words as I just did there, it drove me crazy. But also, I was willing to put in that work to become better as a better speaker and just better conversationalist in general. And one of the things that a podcast will give you is, especially as a host, is you get to a party, you could literally just ask the same questions you asked on your podcast shows, because a lot of times it's wonderful is you just ask an open-end question and you shut up, which is hard to do for me, somebody who's I like to talk. So hopefully that answered your questions. I can go a lot of different directions. Where would you like me to go, actually? I'll let you drive this.
No, and I love it. So one of the very first guests we had on this show, I mean, actually the first one, is also mentioned exactly that, like, being a host is actually, it's not that it's not for everybody, but it's like, it requires some work. And like, you need to understand that at some point, it's like, you ask a question, you follow up on the point, you hit on something, and then you shut up. Like, it's about the guest. And that's so hard. And I love this analogy you make with the, you go to a party and you're like, okay, let's just tackle it in a podcast way, because it makes sense, right? It's about understanding about people, learning about them and letting them speak. Another good hack is, if you have a podcast and you go to an event, you can say, hey, would you like to come on my show? Boom, you have your icebreaker, which is amazing. No, so lots of thing there. Okay, so that's how and why you started it. First few episodes were painful to edit. And then why did you... So maybe one of the questions that are tickling me. Why did you make the link between a startup and a podcast? Why was it a good idea, according to you, to think like, okay, someday I'm going to go in the startup world and like start my own. And then you were like, okay, it would be good to have a podcast to meet with those people. It's indeed better to say than let's go for a coffee. But why did you hit on that particular thing?
Well, let's think about like, well, so one is funding, because I wanted to do a startup that was going to have to be probably most likely going to have to fundraise and get venture backing. But this could be any vertical, any business. Like, I really like... super into roofing. You talk to a lot of construction people. It's one of the easiest ways to meet people who are established in the industry. And then and it's a soft thing. Like, I'm asking them questions, giving them a platform to tell us their knowledge. I'm learning. So I have learned that I'm one of the best hosts on something I just want to learn about, because it's real. You're not like looking at your list of questions all the time, struggling. You're actually... you know, the time gets up too soon. You know, you wish it was longer. And then I also I really want to be connected to more venture capitalists. Like, if you want to fundraise a company, like, you're going to have to, you need to know as many as possible. And that wasn't the only piece of that, but like, that was it. I've done a lot of business before, but they've all been traditional small businesses, either self-funded or through like a bank or through a business partner. So it was an area I did not know in, and I did not want to walk in and seem like I didn't know the information. And on that, that has extremely worked. Like, one of the person who connected us, Sean Flynn, he's in private equity, but it's in the same kind of area, and he knows a lot of people in the venture capital world. And angels, which is basically pre-venture, right? Yes, similar stuff. He just, because he was on my podcast, and then he kind of would send me a couple people and I'd send him people, we just developed a great relationship. And last year we threw an event here in Austin, Texas, where all the panelists came in from Silicon Valley, where he's based out of, on their own dime. And they were all the person who founded I'm blanking on stuff, but the big, you know, angel networks and all these different things, like the big people, as one guy has done 5 startups, all came in on their own dime because they were either on my podcast or his. And that was it. It was just like, you know, you end up developing this great network.
He told me about this event, I think in the interview, which is to be published tomorrow, the day we are recording this. But cool. So it was, yeah. So that's the power of podcasts, right? You get to network to a level that's, I don't think that many channel now. Actually, question for you, Darren. Have you seen anything other than the podcast, you who are in the marketing space for a while now, that has such a strong connecting power with people? And then to maybe bring that question to the next level as well, what have you seen being the difference in that power, not sure how to phrase it here, in the in-person and the virtual? You who have done both, started with the in-person and then the virtual. Is there any other way to connect like this with people? And then, when it comes to podcasts, person in person versus virtual, what's your take?
Well, absolutely, there's other ways to do it. Just podcasting is just much more efficient, right? So networking events are amazing. Hosting networking events are super powerful. Like that event we put on, like then I develop connection with not only all the panelists, the people there, but that is a ton of work. Just to throw one a year or one a quarter would be, you know, and that would be a full time job. Going to networking events is great, but like we have lives and stuff. So a podcast is a way to hack the same system of connecting with somebody, understanding people, you know, just developing this back and forth and just kind of fully meeting somebody, you know. The thing about in-person versus virtual, you can't be in-person. As we all know with meetings, there's a reason why people fly across the world to try to close a deal or get in person, because it just is so much stronger. But again, that's a lot more work too. You got to have your space. I do videos. So you're talking about 3 or 4 camera angles and a lot more editing and all these other things. It adds complexity. And so you got to think like, you know, am I doing a podcast that I'm trying to, I want to meet 1,000 people and do that in a span of a few years? You know, it's just be really hard to do it other ways. Now, I try to do both. I still do the networking events and the podcast, right? I don't think it's a zero sum, right? You try to do all of them.
100%. 100%. And making the link between the two is also super relevant. Like we, for our first show, Corporate Treasury 101, we got invited to the biggest events in Europe and in the US because we had the show and we built an audience ourselves. So when people invite you to an event, they're like, hey, these guys, it's a win-win. Like they're also going to bring, you know, part of their audience and like, shed light on this event and bring it to the next level next year. So that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned one thing that you were struggling with, especially at the beginning there, and is the editing, which was a pain for you. What were the other challenges you faced, and how did you walk around them after 4 or 5 years of podcasting?
Oh, I don't think I've walked around them yet, but you know, one of the things, yeah. I think we all have shortcomings, and one of mine is, I like things to be, you know, it's like the problem with perfection. You know, I want things to be really, really well done. And I started my podcast with this kind of a higher editing touch. And so, and by the way, in the future, and I've moved down to once a month right now, which I dislike, but I kind of had to. I have a 6-month-old baby, got a startup, got a company I'm running to. Something had to give, but I hate that process because now I got two episodes ready to go out still. So if I record an episode today, it's like, oh, it'll be out in 3 months. It's a terrible process for the guests. Like I said, I'm all about the guests. So I am going to kick that up. And I've thought about, do I do even a higher touch? Because there's very few of those that are doing that, more like How I Built This by Guy Raz with music and all this stuff. And I do have a little bit of music on mine, but even more harsher and more editing. Or do I go like live, you know, and barely touch it and make it easier because now I'm a better host. I can probably do that now. So that'd be one way to do it, would just be a softer touch, you know, on the editing and just let it happen. And I've thought about that. But then again, you know, like I said, a lot of other people can do that, right? So the editing part, I've hired people locally. I've hired people overseas, you know, in India to do it for me. I've done it myself. I've used some AI tools, Autopod, which is a tool that automatically cuts your stuff in Adobe Premiere. but still has to be touched some more and has a few shortcomings. I don't have a great answer other than time and commitment and just making a priority, which is tough because for me, there's not a direct revenue link to my podcast. I've had some revenue gains around it and some wonderful things that have happened, but it's not like I produce a podcast and I get $2,000 or something, you know, like, so, you know, to put it as a priority, sometimes it does it for me. Sometimes it hasn't been number one, like it was at one point. So I don't have a good answer other than the fact that it's always going to be, you know, whatever my process is, just like anything else, as I'm going through this here, like, I think I got to settle on a new process and go with it and either put more dollars to it to make it better, you know, more people that are outside of me, or simplify it.
Oh, I love that. There is so much. So there, let me ask a very specific question to start unpacking all this. And it's going to be a very interesting one for me because you are a photographer by training, right? Or by experience, as what you were explaining earlier. I watched a couple of your latest episodes and they are all in black and white. Why is that?
Oh, yeah, man. That was so, which is interesting too, because color, I was like, when I first started as a photographer in like 2008, I did like a lot heavier editing, not the HDR, like weird stuff we did, but I did just a lot. I wanted them, it was like more artful. It was very colorful. So I had this like span of 10 years, 15 years of just very heavy color. And I really started liking the black and white, and it was just different. If I post my stuff on social media, and people, I have comments on YouTube, people, they're like, the black and white is killing me. Like it drives them crazy. I'm like, good. I want an emotion. I want you to love it or hate it, you know? So it goes back to, you know, how am I different? And we grow up and everybody, you know, try to not be so weird or different. And then you grow up. You're like, how could I not be the same as everyone else? And there has been a couple of times where, like, I've had a couple episodes. I have one that is absolutely unreal. I went to this person's house who is blind, full blind. His name is Richard Turner, but he's a card mechanic, means he can, like, fix a game of cards. He can do it all through the touch and feel. You know, it's amazing. And we went through his house, went there. This amazing episode. And I definitely should have done that one with color, but like I've always done black and white. So I left it black and white. I might go ahead and export that episode in color for the YouTube people out there just because, but I tell you what, it's what you're asking me the question because it's different. And that's what it is.
I love that. And I also love that you're from a marketing background because you're gonna get what I'm gonna ask here. How does that impact the retention rate? Have you seen a difference between, because it's important to catch the eye, right? In the era of TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, you name it, whatever your favorite platform is, retaining attention is key. Colors, having visual effects, having like, you know, something changing on your screen every second, having subtitles, having like this bang, this noise, this thing. That's important to keep attention. On the long format side of things, you're less looking into this, but still, you look at the biggest YouTubers out there, Mr. Beast, like there is literally a change of frame every 3 seconds maximum. Have you seen doing videos in black and white impacting positively or negatively the retention rates? Because it's an amazing like branding stuff. But when it comes to results, have you seen anything different than colorful ones, for instance?
Yeah, I do feel like social media, I take a hit on the black and white. I do. I think, I don't know because I haven't tested it. So my answer as a marketer would be like, let's test it. You know, historically, probably the color, probably all this, you know. But the real answer would be you would have to test it to really know. I would say when I launched it and just my network, people, I even got people ask me why the black and white stuff. So I think it helped initially. And it's hard because some of the ones I'm like, this probably would look better in color and all this, that. And, you know, look, it's a podcast. So I could break the rules at any time and just do colors. So, you know, maybe that's a great thing to just try. Let's test it, especially like if I do ads and reels, those disappear anyway. So like, you know, you might not hurt a brand. And I think my long format, as long as I still do black and white, I don't think there's anything, you know, there's no like police that'd be like, hey, no, you can't do color now. Your brand is black and white. But to in my like back of my head, I feel like it probably has hurt a little bit. And probably there's been a couple times where I've thought about like switching the color.
Yeah, fair. So the reason I'm asking this, Derad, is on top of so all the marketing things and the friends close to mind who are going to listen to this are going to laugh at this, but I was spending too much time on Instagram Reels. So I tried like putting a timer, and then I put the timer, the Instagram shut down after 50 minutes of usage during the day, but then I go on YouTube Shorts. I do the same thing. So then I put the timer on YouTube Shorts, and then I install TikTok. The thing that worked for me was to go in the color filter settings of my phone and just turning my screen to black and white. And like, it's so much less tempting to stay on the phone. Like you grab it and you're like, heck, that doesn't have any flavor. So it's like, it makes me spend less time. Now, would I have the color on the screen and come on yours? And I'm like, oh, wow, that's actually, you know, attract attention, because I'm like, that's different from the things I'm seeing. But hence the interested question. I would like to go a little bit deeper into the monetization part of things, Derad, and you mentioned it earlier. But so let's start with this for maybe. Let's start with your business. So you have several ventures going on. Can you walk us throughout the life cycle of the podcast? Where have you been business-wise? What have you done? And have you built or seen any links between the podcast and your businesses?
So I'll go back. Pre-podcast, actually, I was already thinking I really should be a podcast. I really wanted to have one, but not like super strong. But it was just in the back of my head. I didn't really communicate that out because I am the type of person, if I say I'm doing something, I usually I want to follow up on that almost every time. And I was on a show or two, I believe, yeah, maybe like one, but it was like an okay show. And then I met this guy, Javier Mercedes. He had a podcast called Passion in Progress. And he was somebody that was early on podcaster. He ran the Chives podcast, and before he had his own, and he had a legit setup. This is like a good one. And he had me. I went to his house. I was on his show. I met him during like New Year's Eve party, right? Kind of that networking. And he's like, "Oh, I got to have a podcast. You know, I think it'd be interesting to be on." And I was on that show and talking much more about e-commerce. I have a big e-commerce background. Kind of one of the claims of fame I always talk about is, I turned an online store that was doing about $15,000 USD per month and turned it over to $1 million per month, and we got it acquired. So we talked a lot about e-commerce. The next day on our live chat on my marketing agency website, we got a lead, and I closed that client for $2,600 a month. And our average clients, by the way, is like 3.5 years. So that's a wonderful client for us. It's very average for us. We were kind of in that price point. I go, Oh, this is a great way to soft sell. Somebody that's listening to how I can market for an hour and a half. And if they agree with what I said, or even just want to know more, like I already got them. I warmed them up already. And so that was like acceleration. I believe that I was on that podcast in January. I think I launched mine in like February or March. Like, you know, back of the head for maybe a year or something. With, you know, as soon as there was a potential monetization cash part of it there. So that's pre. Posts, I use it as a personal brand increase, which has helped immensely to personal brand. It's all soft sell. There's no hard sell that I do on anything with the podcast. But it is connecting me to people, like I've talked about plenty on this. But it also just showcases skills that me or slash my team can do with that, you know. That's why it's a higher production quality podcast. I've already sprinkled in multiple times my startup. I've named some names here. You know, I try not to do that too much, but it just happens because it just falls out of your mouth. So there's always got something around it. And so with my startup, we're kind of still getting product market fit right now, and we're getting close enough. One of the ways our kind of launch plan will be, I'll go on 50 podcasts. Like I'll do a podcast run is what I call those. And 50 is just an arbitrary number, but I'll go on podcasts, you know, one or two a day for 2 months. And that'll be my marketing strategy. One of the main marketing strategies, because it costs $0.
100%. Oh, I'm sorry, but in all the answers you give, I have like three things to follow up on. So
please.
First things first, but I love it. So One of the first thing you said, which is not directly podcast related, but now I would like to pick your brain on this. How do you take an e-commerce from 15K a month to 1 million? Like, give me the secret so I can just stop the podcast right now, the agency, and go build an e-commerce website.
First and foremost, you have to have a product that people like, people want.
Yeah.
Fair. Price. So if it's something that somebody else, you have to have a way to price it well. I can give you 1,000 tips and tricks, but if you don't have something that somebody wants or needs or a better price, it's going to be hard. You can still do it, but it's going to be uphill battle. If you have that or can find that or somehow, shape, or form get that, then you're way ahead of the game. And then you have to do everything. First, you build a great I'll do as fast as I can because this I could spend hours on this. Build a great foundation. Now, this is much easier these days. Back when I did that, by the way, I've done that for clients. I actually turned one that was doing very little to over 2 million a month with clients. But nowadays, you can Shopify is wonderful, a big commerce. Back then, it was much harder to get a great foundational website. You build a great customer support team, and I recommend them being yourself for a while so you can understand people's problems, needs. Get a bunch of sales, so even if you lose money for a while, great, fine. Do whatever you can do. And then do every single way of marketing. Your social media, you got to do affiliates to where people send you, and you give them a percentage of the cut. And you got to do influencers. I mean, you got to do it all. And you got to test it all. I would have some episodes I could point to two that would be great on that. But again, that's a long, long answer. And then you have to ride it out because it's 15,000 to 12,000 to 18,000 to 16,000. And then it just keeps slowly going. It took 6 years to go to over $1 million a month. So it was an overnight success, but it felt like it to those around me because I was like, oh, wow, you're running a big store now. I'm like, well, been doing that for like 5-6 years now, but...
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh man. And so, what was the product that you were selling? Yeah.
So we refurbished computers for the most part. So we did some phones and stuff back then, but computers. So now you can get computers at decent prices and stuff. But you know, back then, you know, we would sell our average price point was like $300. So a real nice computer for $300. So that's huge. The problem with the computer is moving parts. There's a lot of problems. And also, when we started, your Windows drivers didn't always work out when we would reinstall Windows and, you know, a clean version. So there was a lot of operation side to us. So we had to figure out not just how to sell it, but how to make it properly. But that was a product and a price point that people needed it and wanted, and we offered a good price. So our starting point was above what most people could do as somebody that's just like getting something imported from China that somebody else can do, right?
Wow. Okay. Love that. So you tried all the marketing techniques, basically. There is no one that has to be overlooked because you need to try everything that you can. So you just identify the one that will eventually work. Is that more or less how you arrived?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So like to do that kind of volume, I mean, you're talking about $1 million a month sounds like a lot. Well, that's $12 million a year, $300 machines. We're talking about thousands and thousands of orders, thousands of orders. So, okay. You know, you got to get a customer. That's super important because as soon as their customer is yours, you can retarget them with social media ads, but also email marketing is still huge. It's not as every day. It's not as big as it used to be. It's harder. Inboxes are so full, but that's one of the cheapest ways. You do a website, you do a bunch of content, try to get an SEO going out there. You know, that's more free people that you can, you know, get into your circle, your sphere for somewhat free, you know? And then you have your paid stuff. You got to do your ads. Ads are tough though, man. I try to do as much what I call free marketing as possible. It's not really free, but that's your, you know, your SEO, which is a long game, but you're constantly running that one. But when I do SEO, like I don't like to do an SEO landing page that's just an SEO page that is junk. I like to do a page that has great content that is going to convert somebody into a buyer. Because I'm not just there for vanity metrics and say, oh, my traffic went up. I want the revenue to go up. That's more important to me and my conversion rate. So creating great content, same with the podcast. I'm going to say the same thing for an e-commerce store. You know, create content that's going to get people interested that they might share with somebody else. And then the affiliates were, that was probably 15 or 20% was affiliates, you know, pay people. Like a lot of people do affiliate network, which is basically where somebody sends you somebody and there's a cookie there that for 30 days, if they buy, you give whoever sent you that a cut. Well, I was a big fan of giving 15 or 20%. So 20% of $300, I'm going to give you $60 to send me somebody because you're going to send me more, right? A lot of people won't like to give a heavy cut. I'm like, as much as you could afford, give them, even if you break even or lose a little bit, because then you have that customer. And getting a customer usually costs you quite a bit of money. So if I can get a customer at net almost $0, I'm usually rather happy. I try to get a customer and make money, of course. But if you're playing the long game and you're giving them something that they like, then a lot of times they're going to tell somebody about it or they're going to buy again at some point.
Oh my God, I could go down the rabbit hole all day, Mehran. I love this. That's going to be for another interview. But last question on this, because I cannot resist asking it. What's your cheapest way of building backlinks? How do you do that?
The cheapest way is you could just ask other people and develop relationships with people and just be like, hey, look, I'll put one on mine, you put one on yours. That is your cheapest way. I don't do that a lot. This is the tips and tricks thing that you could hire out to. You can get somebody in India or some overseas for $150 a month USD. You could get somebody to do this. The backlinks that I dislike, but it is part of the game of that they so there's like 1,000 social media websites out there that you don't even know about that you can create profiles on and link to your website. I think a lot of these are set up just for SEO. You could do that. You know, I'm more in the long game of SEO and anything else, so I'm not like a huge fan, but that is a one way of doing it. You create a podcast and be like, hey, could you mind linking back to my podcast website or your business website? That's a great way of doing it. The thing is, you got to think, Google looks at you as a popularity machine. So the more popular of a website that links back to you, the better. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to get a really popular website to link to you. If you write them a, say, article, you know, that they're going to want to put on their own. Every website's looking for content. So if I write you an article about what I think would help your followers or your business people or your clients, and just say, hey, all I ask is you to link to my website, you're probably going to do it. You're probably going to post it. So you could do that too. It just takes time.
Agreed. Okay. I'm happy to know that I knew most of those. So that's reassuring. Cool. Your startup, Product Market Fit. Where are we with that? Can you talk about it?
Absolutely. So we are live. It's realmarket.com. What we do is we match home buyers and sellers together with real estate agents, but we do it all through video and kind of like a Tinder, right? You know, so you can, we ask you some questions and then we just see what you like or what you want. We can even got personality profiles. And then there are the video pitches of realtors. Hey, you know, hi, my name's Darren. I've been a realtor in Austin for 15 years. And you're like, next, and another video pitch. And they're like, oh, I would like to talk to them. You can start a live video chat, or you could just, you know, if you like to text, you can just text them. And it goes directly to that realtor's phone. So what we're trying to do is, for one, see if people care. Like, I don't know about, because you're in France, right? So I'm not so sure if this even translates there, but we have a real estate agent that helps you buy a property or sell your house. So I'm not so sure it's a huge problem. I think it is of finding a realtor that matches with you and a good realtor that helps. Well, we want to make sure that people who don't know me, like just some random person out there, wants to use our service. Everybody who's used the service so far, we just launched in November, has known me in some way, shape, or form. So that counts for like a business, but for a startup, I need somebody to like fully not know who I am, find it, and use it. We've had some, like, but not like, we're not perfect yet. And we need to do that in a way that is cost efficient or effective, I guess. So that's where we're still figuring that out. We're doing some ads, we're doing some things, you know, kind of doing on the small amounts right now. Testing, lots of testing. As soon as I even sniff that I think we got it figured out, that's when I'm going to, you know, that's when you kind of go a little heavier and harder.
Oh man, that's so cool. Why did you pick the real estate industry?
So great question. So I've had a bunch of clients that are like large real estate agents here in Austin, and we've helped them doing websites and video and SEO and a bunch of different things, social media.
And it's just in the US here, it's the real estate space is very antiquated. Technology really hasn't done a whole lot there yet. Zillow did take the transparency to see, hey, what's your own house worth? What's your neighbor house worth? What's actually out there listed? It did an amazing job, but it only did a one piece, you know, maybe 10% of what the real estate industry is for just your normal home buyer and seller. So I have large aspirations in real estate to kind of overhaul some antiquated things with technology, but you can only start with one thing. Why kind of they, you know, matching people with agents? Well, one, I think it's an area that is rather easy to do because I love marketplaces and it's kind of like a marketplace. And two, there's already a revenue kind of arm behind it. Agents are already used to paying referral fees. So it's kind of an easier place to start, but it's only one place to start. The aspiration is to grow a very large company that does one thing or multiple things, but at least one thing really well with technology that used to not be done through technology in real estate.
That's smart. Go ahead.
There's also a lot of money in real estate. So if you're trying to build a big business, it's a big business area. I'm hitting home runs. I'm swinging for the fence. Either they're going to hit a home run here and figure something out and provide a ton of value to people, or I'm going to strike out and do something different.
Yeah. No, I love this. That makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. You want to go in the high margin, high volumes industries and real estate. I mean, I have the feeling that it can never really stop. At worst, there will be a couple of years where it will be slower, 2008, for instance, but then eventually it picks up again because population is just increasing and you need to find a home to those people. There is like transaction happening all the time. So
all the time. And the thing is, if I save somebody like 1%, and saving might be an area we go into, not sure, but let's say if I save somebody 1%, well, the average home price here in Austin is like $550,000. I'd be saving somebody $5,500, you know, or whatever it is, whatever the math is. So, yeah. So I also think that whenever you do any company or podcast or anything that you're going to put a lot of time and effort into, and keep in mind when you're watching TV, that's you're putting time and effort into that too. And, you know, if you play simple games, you're going to get simple prizes. You know, if you're going to put your time and effort into something, you know, I like to sit there and think, is can I create a lot of value here to somebody? And is that value they notice? Can they notice the value I give them? Or am I just kind of doing one little inch better than what they got beforehand? You know, say they're the podcast. I want to be able to give a lot of value for my guests that they notice, that they think like, oh man, that I remember that podcast. I remember that person. I remember Darren. I try. It doesn't always happen that way, of course. And I think the same way when you're starting your own company. It's, you know, can is it a memorable, valuable experience for whoever that you're doing business with?
Amen. So now the $1 million question, Darren. Has the podcast helped in any way to connect you with VCs, angels, investors, PE? How did the podcast help the startup? If at any point, and if not, that's fine as well.
So I'm playing the kind of bigger, longer game with the podcast. We have not fundraised yet for my startup. But when I do, I have about 15, 20 people that would be the first people that I email, and they're all from the podcast. So I would say that the game's not over yet. The score, we can't tally it yet. I have definitely gotten a lot of different benefits from the podcast and some clients that I think came from there. I do have that one that happened that was very, I asked and it was very obvious. But let's say, I mean, when we fundraise for my company, I don't know yet, but my guess is it will probably be looking for like something, you know, in the millions of dollars, $10 million, something like that, like large fundraising. So if you ask me that question, I get funded. Even if it wasn't somebody on my podcast, I could almost guarantee there will be a first, second, at the worst, third degree connection from somebody on my podcast. So I'm looking at getting the huge help from the show. And guess what? If that doesn't even happen, say go and do something else. Do you think that Miguel looking for a job is going to be better with this network now or what it was beforehand? And the obvious is now with the network of people, because they would be the first people I would message. Hey,
look, you know, I'm looking for, you know, to do this in this industry and whatever. Do you know anybody? Because now I have a great network to try to be walked in through the side door of a company as try to going through the bombarded, heavily defended front door.
Amen to that as well. Darren, I love this. I like to close those interviews by asking your advice to podcasters. And I'm also going to put in there the wannabe podcasters, either people who are thinking about starting a podcast. We are talking mostly to businesses, marketers, and marketing leaders. But so what would be your advice to those starting and or being in the midst of a podcast but haven't seen yet the real upside from it?
So let's do the people who want to start, the wannabe podcasters, because by the way, most of my audience, well, it's always hard to tell where your audience is completely, but the people who reach out the most are the wannabe entrepreneurs. So how do you go, you know, how do you get pushed off the cliff to start? So I love that kind of person, because we talk about that a lot, you know, on my show. For one, you just have to start. That could mean just get a buddy. You don't even have to release the episode. Just start. Book four of them. Just book, get four booked. Get them on the books. And guess what? You're going to do it. You're going to get very nervous before the first one. Just do it. You know, like, just going to start. Well, that might not be enough for some people. So, like, and you know, some people might need something else. But I guarantee you, if you do want it, and even if it's tougher, the next one's going to be a little easier. The next one's going to be a little easier. And the very first one that I recorded, I did with a friend who's a film director, Christine Chen, great friend of mine, has an amazing story. I decided, hey, Christine, I think I could do better. Can we do it again? So she was my first, but she's my fourth episode because I didn't release that episode. I redid it. Now, it probably was good enough, and I probably didn't need to do that, but that's like, my problem with perfection and trying to make this really great thing as opposed to just moving forward. Also, like, you're probably better than you think. So, you probably have some kind of value that people would like to hear or should hear. And then I would also say that people that are out there and haven't seen a whole lot, like, what is your expectations? Like, I think today's world, we need thousands, hundreds of thousands of likes or listens. Five people is enough. It really is. Could you imagine, like, talking and having five people listen to you in person feels pretty strong. And by the way, they're like quiet and listening. And if they listen to the whole show, that's pretty amazing. So I think we got to right size expectations for, like, at first, because I have to constantly think about that too, because the numbers are all over the place, you know, and my podcast is everywhere. It's on every single audio platform, but also all the social media platforms and YouTube. So I have to kind of like, it's kind of a hard to aggregate, you know, which one does best where, because there is different episodes that do better visually, different ones that do better on social media because that person has a better, bigger social media following. And then if it is, you're looking to get the biggest number, which I don't think should be your number one metric, but if that is, then you probably need to book people that have huge followings, and you need to ask them, give them multiple graphics, give them edited pieces for them to post. Don't expect them to do all the work for you. You're going to have to, you know, I give a shared doc on Google Drive of here's graphics, here's edited pieces, here's the summaries, here's sample social media posts. Don't expect them to do all that. You know, you've already asked them to be on your show and taken up an hour of their time. Don't expect them to do all the rest as well. And then if they don't share it, you got to nudge them. Hey, can you share it? If you're looking at revenue stuff, well, maybe you should have people that are probably a little bit more in your niche or whatever. And it is a long game. Think about, like, if you're spending money on traditional media, your audio, your radio, your TV advertising, you're probably spending thousands of dollars in advertising. Have you done that yet for your podcast? I would highly recommend it, starting at just $5, $10 ads and do some advertising. Like, if your goal is to get, you know, $2,000 or $20,000 or $200,000 in revenue, you probably, you know, I think we also think today, like, things should be free because they were for a minute on social media. Well, those are billboards you have to pay for nowadays, but you don't have to pay much for them. So maybe you should do some advertising behind your podcast to see what happens.
and see, you know, do it for a month or two, and because it might take a minute, and see what happens. So the thing is, there's a lot of noise out there. There's a lot of opportunity for free information out there. Unfortunately, in today's world, you either have to be so different and interesting, or you have to kind of pay to play for people to know, to hear you.
Oh, this episode is full of golden nuggets. I absolutely loved it, Darren. Let's maybe wrap this episode with the traditional question we always close on. What are three podcasts that you would recommend? Of course, you cannot say Establishing Your Empire, but that will be on top of the show notes, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So I've already mentioned How I Built This by Guy Raz. That would be like the big podcast, like, you know, show. Still love that one. So, you know, mine's modeled after that, or like the Tim Ferriss Show. But those are so obvious, you know, the big ones. So I love Sean Flynn's episode, Silicon Valley Startup, because there's multiple reasons with that. One, I obviously have a connection to him, and we've kind of gone, you know, that's how we got connected, Guillaume, my bad. I keep putting that L in there.
All good. You corrected it yourself. That's perfect, man.
But like smaller shows, if you reach out to me, if you just go through my, any which way, you go to my social media channels or on my website, I'm going to respond to you. Like a smaller show with it, you know, that's even seems bigger, but it's still not like, you know, your Tim Ferriss. They're going to reach out to you. Let's see what else.
Sense.
I need to think about that. Actually, some other ones.
What do you listen to, Darren? Do you listen to podcasts?
Yeah. So all the time. So I'm pulling up my, you know, I jump around so many, you know. You know, anything by Naval Ravikant, he does kind of have his podcast, but anything that he has, I listen to 8 times because that puts me in the proper mindset. I will really listen to his, you know, he did one on Joe Rogan a few times that I love the way he speaks. And one of the reasons why I listen to podcasts is it puts me in the right mental mode to speak a certain way, to think a certain way. You know, and then it's not really a podcast, but there's This American Life is wonderful. My favorite podcast of all time, and it's a little bit more of a show, is Startup. It was the Gimlet, how they started, the story of how they started. So this is the very first episode. It's like 8 years old. But especially your question to people, like how to start and you're going to suck, like that is the best show ever. And I've listened to that probably 4 times. That very first season, the rest of the seasons are okay. They're still good, but the very first season is complete gold. And then like let's follow your friends, like look at your, you know, friends that have podcasts, please listen to them. Only Vans by Bree Bagwell, she was my very first person on my episode. She's a Texas country music singer who's been in the business for 20-30 years, has actually toured in France very briefly. She's, you know, like not massive, but you know, has a following. Wonderful podcast, very interesting. You'll they're almost all musicians that are on there. And, you know, like I said, Passion and Progress by Javier Mercedes. Do listen to your friends' podcasts and share their stuff, because guess what? If you launch yours, you hope they do the same. And so it's reciprocal.
100%. So I would definitely give a go at those. A word on Naval Ravikant. So obviously the people close to the tech space will know it. But like the How to Get Rich series is one of the reason we started podcasting with Usam and our whole podcast agency. And I mean, this guy is such in an abundance mindset that it's like, it's amazing. And what he says is pure logic and in my eyes, truth, that I cannot recommend it enough. It's amazing. So Usam, my co-founder, he's Scottish, but he has family in Pakistan. When he goes to Pakistan, he often does a trip that takes 5 hours. The How to Get Rich, the whole series is about 4.5 hours. So he has listened to it by now, like dozens of times, but it's just like, it is so good.
It is so good. It is gold. Do you mind if I put you on the spot for a moment?
Go for it.
So you have a podcast agency. Do you mind giving me your pitch of like what you guys do and what your value proposition is?
100%. So we build podcasts that generate revenues.
I love that. That's a power statement. There we go.
That's thank you. Yeah, we're thinking a lot about the offer. So the whole story, I mean, I'm going to make it very short, but we started a podcast ourselves. We started meeting other podcasters, and the first guest, Mike Richard, actually, who was our very first client. We do a series with him. It's in a niche in finance. We do 4 episodes with him, 4 episodes that were meant to be 15 minutes each. They end up being 1 hour, 10 each. I was like, guys, this is amazing. Loved it. The guy is an amazing speaker. I was going to say Rubro, but Mike, I love you. You know it. But like, he speaks a lot. So it ends up being 1 hour, 1 hour and a half per episode. And he's like, that's amazing. That's great, guys. I'm going to give it to my marketing agency. They're going to do be doing a whole thing. I'm like, wait a minute. It's a side hustle. We love it, but we don't have money to put into this. I said, no worries. I'm covering it all. And so we proposed to do it for him at a lesser price and so on. Point being, we found out that podcasters actually pay money to get their show edited, post-produced, and so on. But a lot of people do this. So what we ended up seeing is podcasts can be such a great way to, as you say, Darren, soft sell. Create a system around it, a content strategy that drives traffic towards one place that you can then nurture and convert the leads off. You can interview your ideal guest. You can like do so many things. And if you have like high tickets clients, it's like you can 10x the cost of a podcast basically, all while building your brand, getting great content out there and building your social networks. So that's how we positioned it. We're like, we are only helping business owners, marketers, and people who want a podcast, but who wants to be able to prove an ROI on it to their leadership or to their own business. It was a bit more than a 1 minute elevator speech, but that's a bit the idea. Was that good enough for the somebody in the tech space, Darren?
No, I love it. It's absolutely, especially giving you talked about the value first of what somebody was looking for. So one of the things that a lot of people do was the opposite, is they will talk, me, my service, not like what I give you. And basically, it sounds like to me, is if you want to make money, if you want to generate income or revenue, you're the person to hire for your podcast.
Well, that's how we position ourselves, and I hope that's a true statement. But so far we have a happy client, so it seems to be the case, yeah. Darren, thank you so much for coming on the show. This episode was absolutely great. Loved it. So thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Guillaume. I really appreciate putting together this platform for me, and it's fun to talk about, being on the other side and talk about the podcast. Because normally I'm like more, e-commerce or business or marketing or startup or whatever. It's been the first one I've been on like this. So I really appreciate, and I love what you're doing, because I think it's a very powerful thing to be, to connect with people and just, give somebody a platform to speak.
100%. Thank you so much, Darren.
Thank you for listening to the B2B Podcast Stories. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please don't forget to hit subscribe and check us out at ghamarketing.com. Have a great day.